match the colors and stuff, so.
Yeah, really nice.
We're all here, so I think.
You're not gonna find anything else, I guess, so.
Well, and.
Testing.
I'd like to call to order the Wednesday, June 12th, 2019, meeting of the Oceano Community Services District. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Vian?
Here.
Director Repogum?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Austin?
Here. You all please join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Brings us to agenda review. Is there anything on the agenda anyone would like to?
President Austin, members of the board, we have modified our recommendation in item 8B, cash disbursements. We have provided a modified staff report with the items that have been added to disbursements. We added $5,434.34 to the added warrants, and they are listed on the back of the cash disbursements. There's also $29.97 for a customer refund who received their final bill and still had her credit remaining, so we're refunding them back that. This adjustment will increase the total cash disbursements from $63,249.87 to $68,714.27. So at the appropriate time, the recommendation would be for approval of staff recommendations in 8B as modified. Another item that is to be noted is an addendum was posted to the website, and also they're on the back table. That's for item 9A, and then also 8D, which is the public facilities fee agreement. We updated the president's name to say Linda Austin instead of Karen White as the one in your agenda package, so I have that here to be signed if approved. So thank you for getting those to us. And the link was updated in the public facilities item as well. So another note is we're going to be checking links, not just reading staff letters. So thank you. And that's it.
Okay. Anything else?
I just had one question on 8B. I was wondering if it might be possible for like the larger disbursements, if there could be a notation as to what it's for. Like maybe if it's over $1,000. Like I was wondering, for example, what's the Lucia Muchiamar $1,200? What's that?
That's a refund for a deposit they had given us to help with a hot tap, and so we got reimbursed for any work we did with them. So we have a folder that shows all the work the guys did and any parts we needed, and we put that against the deposit. I believe the deposit was $1,500 to begin with. So.
Okay. Yeah, just a general question. I understand that the system doesn't allow you to like readily print out a notation on what the disbursement's for, but if you could note just like the big ones, that would be helpful.
Thank you. Anything else? With that, can we get a motion to approve the agenda with the modification?
I make a motion we approve the agenda for tonight's meeting with the modifications and changes that have been already explained.
Okay, and we have no closed session tonight? Okay, so that brings us to public comment for items that are not on the agenda. Is there anyone?
Second.
Pardon me?
We didn't vote on the agenda review. I just made a motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so
second.
We have a motion to approve the agenda, and you second it. Okay. Can we get a roll call on the agenda review?
It's okay.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Repogum?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay, thank you. Now, no closed session. Now we'll go to public comment. Is there any public comment for items not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none. We'll move on to special presentations and reports, staff reports. We get operations field supervisor, Tony Marchino.
Good evening, board. Tony Marchino. All right, for the last couple weeks, we've had our, just want to cover Lopez. Lopez is currently at 59.3% full, which is 29,275 acre feet. We had zero SSOs in the month of May. State water deliveries year to date is 11 acre feet. Lopez water year currently has delivered 74 acre feet. And since the beginning of the year, we've pumped 114 acre feet. So we've had our daily rounds. Work orders has been 8. USAs have been 10. Customer service calls, 7. We had 3 after-hours call-outs. One was for a power pole that got hit, which affected some of our utilities. We had a call-out for a low flow at a residence, and it was a water softener unit that hadn't been maintained in over 10 years. And we also had a hydrant get hit on pier by one of the recreation companies. The same hydrant that keeps getting hit. All right, and trash for last month, there were 7 311 tickets. We replaced the service line on Crest. We got to slurry that. We paved it. The initial inspections are complete for the fog program. There's a few non-compliance and permits that we have to go back to redo, but the first inspections are done. Security court, there's a valve leaking. We had to pothole and kind of get an idea what's going on over there because the water table is high. We'll be tackling that job next week. Common codes from the meter reads, highs, lows, leaked, you know, notifications for leaks to the residents. The hydrant on pier got reinstalled. Still doing meter replacements, door hangers. Lancaster, that's in Arroyo Grande. We service water over there. We replaced the service line because it's all galvy and they're just slowly breaking. But this time, instead of trenching across the entire road, we used a mole system and bored it. And it saved us some time. It saved us probably over $2,000 in paving because you just pothole at the main and then you pothole any utilities that are in the way just so you don't hit them like a gas main. Went really well, and we're going to start doing that when we got to go across these roads. You know, save us time, save us money in paving and slurry. Maintenance at well 8 on the chlorine pump. And we removed the well house roof to well 4 because we'll be pulling that well tomorrow. Pull it, find out why it's not producing water, if the shafts broke or the bowls are separated. We'll get a video camera and get that, you know, get an idea what's going on there. Yeah. Any questions?
Yeah. When, like, a hydrant is hit, does that affect residents having brown water? Or?
Absolutely it does. I got about 20 calls. I even had the vice president give me a call because I'm not savvy with internet and social media. And she saw something about residents talking about dirty water. Yeah. And it does. It affected from 19th Street all the way to the beach. That velocity, you know, you got 3,500 gallons a minute coming out. So that water traveling from 19th Street, our main yard where we're producing water, it's flowing at a high rate picking up the sediment. And it will take, you know, 8, 12 hours to settle out. And that's why we will be doing directional flushing of the system as soon as we fix a few more leaks and valves and getting there as soon as we can. And that'll definitely help the system when hydrants do get hit.
Thank you.
Yes.
You said that hydrant's been hit before?
Say again?
You said the hydrant's been hit before?
Yes, it has. It has.
Could we install a bollard or some kind of protection that would keep people from hitting
We've communicated with the county on that, and their bollards are not allowed to be on the sidewalk. That's correct.
So, I mean, there's got to be some solution to protect that.
Mm-hmm. We've looked into it quite a bit. Maybe we can talk to the property owner there or who's renting the property. They can extend their fence out. It's just an area where the sun, you know, the ATVs and the equipment that goes onto the beach. They like to do a lot of U-turns and drive around here, and they're always hitting this hydrant. That's what it's getting hit from. So.
And so we have had discussions with the county, but again, as Tony mentioned, the ability to place bollards in there would be subject to their approval, and they won't approve it. Ultimately, if a hydrant is hit on a repetitive basis, it begs that we simply don't put it back in. Because if it gets reoccurring hit, then that itself is evidence that it's a dangerous facility. And so that's ultimately what we might have to do.
But I assume it was located there for a reason. So is it?
It was a condition established by the county on the developer of the property. So it's not a condition that's established by Oceano CSD. And basically what it is the county will look in and see what's the spacing of fire hydrants. I think they're supposed to be spaced every 300 feet.
Yes, depending on residential, commercial, yeah. 300 to 500 feet, yes.
Yeah, so they'll work and they'll place conditions, and sometimes their placement is not in the best location. So
might be worth looking into then.
So absolutely, we have, and it's definitely an option to probably remove it.
Get a little strict with it. What about, and we do bill people that.
Absolutely, we did get reimbursed. We are going to be reimbursed on this one. When I showed up, the individual who did hit it admitted it to me. We got the information and everything we need to make a claim.
Just seems like relocation somehow would be the solution to it. You know, 20 feet some way, or I know where it is, so I know that it's not an easy solution.
Well, I think they're driving where they're not supposed to drive, so I think you should.
Yes, that's
make
definitely.
Make a fence off or something, you know, it's a sidewalk.
My other issue would be to develop some kind of an informational on our website, and maybe some of the other, like, next door neighbors south, which is where I put the information. But maybe we could, something on our website, I don't know. I went there and there wasn't anything on it, but I don't know whether, you know, on a Sunday morning, how you would deal with that at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, to notify the community that the dirty water is due to a hydrant being hit?
Yeah.
That's something I can definitely look into. And to follow up from the last meeting, we are looking into posting no dumping signs on the alleyways with the poles there. So I got to do a little bit more leg work on that, but we are looking into it, and it can happen. Just take a little bit of time.
Yeah, the issue there is if we want to have an enforceable sign where somebody can be subject to fines by the courts, there's a process that's a little bit lengthy because we have to make a proposal to the courts. The courts have to approve, make sure that the fines that we're proposing are reasonable. I'm not sure exactly, you know, the process they go through, but we can't arbitrarily establish a fine. It has to ultimately be approved. So we could put signs up at any time that says it's not allowed, but if we want to make sure it's an enforceable that's subject to fines, then your board has to adopt appropriate ordinances, and we have to follow up with the courts.
President Austin, directors of the board, I will tell you that the way that would happen is that we would have to establish some sort of a bail schedule that shows what the fines are for various matters and violations, that sort of thing, and the courts do adopt the county board of supervisors then adopts the bail schedules once a year for all agencies. So I believe this would be something that would go through a process like that.
Question. Would we have to go to court on all those and do the legal work?
Yeah. Okay. Would. I think that at that point, anything on an adopted bail schedule would just be handled by the court itself. And what you'd be surprised at is that they put quite a lot of fees that go on top of things. So even if you have something like a fine of $50 for doing something, it probably ends up to be like $450. At the end of the day, it's based on all the fees that we won't get a part of that back. We would maybe get your $50 fine, but it's amazing. It does add up really quick.
How often are you able to identify who dumped something? Like they left something identifiable, or I just wonder how often we would be able to know who to fine unless we have cameras.
Unless you physically see them, it's really hard to identify them unless they leave physical trash that has a name and address.
And Does that happen often?
It has happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not often. It's usually bigger, bulky items, TVs, couches. You see it also. It's not really trash bags. It's just big items that get dumped off by a pickup or something just going through the alleyway.
We had an interesting one a couple years ago that was kind of significant, got some good coverage in the Tribune, and the individuals left a whole bunch of trophies. They had their names on them, so the sheriff's office was
trophies
able
trophies with their name on them?
Yeah, yes. The sheriff's office was able to track them down, yeah. The other one is that's common when we do find evidence is just mail, U.S. mail. People will throw the mail out, and then that has their name on it as well.
Did you get the notice on the couch on Ocean Alley? The Ocean's Alley?
We did pick up a couch recently.
And probably that one.
I believe so.
Did anybody ever get the freezer, the little freezer?
The little mini storage freezer? We picked that up, too.
It's all taped. I was kind of afraid what might
happen. No, we got it all. Yes.
Nobody in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chief Lieberman, do you have anything to report to me tonight?
Good evening, Madam President and Board. Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief. Just a couple of things to share with you. We are in the final stages of our annual weed abatement program, which is, this is an interesting week because Friday at our board meeting will be a protest hearing where folks have their last opportunity to show compliance before we hire a contractor and assess that cost to their properties. There's a lot of folks that have been mowing their properties, and then with our continuing rain, the weeds have come back. But as the weed abatement program clearly states, property owners are responsible for abating that property through the end of the fire season, whatever that has become as far as the end of the fire season. we do have a pretty active fire that crews have gotten a great handle on in the North County. It's at 50% containment. They're starting to release resources from Highway 46 East, which is great to hear. We do plan on having a battalion chief present for the grand opening of the Airpark Bridge tomorrow morning, assuming there's not an emergency that requires that person's attention. We do have an employee, and I know many of you are aware of this person and know him personally, who suffered a heart attack while on duty early Sunday morning. Thankfully, his crew did a great job of caring for him. He ended up at French Hospital, had the appropriate procedures, and is already at home. So we will be dealing with a staffing deficiency. We'll be missing this individual, but trying to support he and his family through his recovery and just hope the best for his outcome. And lastly, Truck 5. I'm always afraid to talk about Truck 5. Truck 5 is our 100-foot aerial truck. It's been out of service since January when the engine was destroyed. We are very close to getting it back between Detroit Diesel, who makes the engine, and the Pierce Authorized Mechanic Center. There's been some confusion about the turbocharger, and on their dime, not our dime, they've gone through three of those. So the third and final turbocharger is installed. We should be picking up tomorrow or Friday. That's what I have to share with you. Questions?
Any questions? Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. General Manager, Mr. Ogren, do you have a...
Yeah, President Austin, members of the board, my last meeting was two meetings ago, so I have a few items. First of all, I want to mention that I did go to the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin hearings with Jeff in Santa Clara County Court, and the primary thing I want to report is in terms of head nods. Jeff is definitely leading in the courtroom, which on acknowledgments from the judge in terms of the... statements that are made, so it's clear that he's got the ear of the judge on that. Also helped support Director Gibson, but I won't, I'll let her report on her success at the Regional Water Management Group grant funding efforts. Also related to Prop 84 in the Interregional grants that we have already received for the Water Resource Reliability Program. We've gotten the tentative approval of the scope changes that will allow us to take some savings and to apply them to design projects, and it looks like we're going to get four waterline projects designed within those pre-existing grants, two of which we've already done, which were paid for out of reserves, so we'll get to replenish the reserves once that final paperwork starts going through. Also met with Tony and the county in preparation for the county drainage project and our utility relocations, and Tony's going to be going to the pre-construction meeting in a week or so from now. And then obviously spending a lot of time on the budgets with Carrie, who will be doing the presentation in a little while. And then lastly, the bids for the generator installation are out, and bid due date is July 2nd. And be glad to answer any questions.
Questions?
No.
Did you have?
I was remiss with one item, and then based on the generator, I now have two more items for you. I'm sorry. I just wanted to clarify what happened at the Arroyo Grande City Council meeting last evening because of a story that aired on KSBY that confused a lot of folks. The Arroyo Grande Council did take affirmative action on both the Second Amendment of the JPA unanimously and also approved the second year of their budget. A lot of folks saw a KSBY story where it said no action was taken, so I worked with the general manager of the station, and at least the online story has been clarified. So I wanted to share that with the board and the community. And lastly, we are finalizing with the county the nuclear power plant funds to assist with the purchase of the generator, and we're getting ready to ask Oceano to bill us for their reimbursement for the 50% grant. So that should be coming very soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the effort on that.
Okay, we don't have a sheriff here, so I will bring it now to our board of directors and outside committee reports. Start with Director Gibson.
Yep. Yeah, so I attended several meetings, but the one that matters is the one that we received $275,000. That was within the Integrated Regional Water Management, and then within that, a Regional Water Management Group, a working group. We competed with about 11 other projects, and we had stiff competition. Essentially, we are upgrading our 2-inch galvanized rusty corroded pipes to 6 or 8-inch PVC pipes. So this will fix, along with our Prop 84 money, this will fix about 10% of our problem pipes. So that's a good start for Oceano. And maybe general manager wants to add to that.
I just want to keep it concise. Good job, Director Gibson. $275,000. I was trying to remember. We had about 197 for the Water Resource Reliability Program. No, that's the new DAC money. It's 275. Yeah, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, overall, in the last several years, it's probably in excess of $700,000. Including money that we still are going to be able to utilize for grants. So that whole IRWM program is doing well. And again, thanks to Director Gibson for exerting good influence at those meetings.
Okay, thank you. I'm just curious, we were competing for these grants. What was the variable that?
Well, they had a set criteria by the Department of Water Resources, and we use that criteria to essentially grade each project, and then the projects with the most points, essentially, you know, so it was kind of a process of elimination.
So there's sort of five primary tenets to, it's part of the California State Water Plan, the Integrated Regional Water Management Program, and what the state is trying to do through incentives and grants is the multiple benefits that might be achieved with a particular project. So the more benefits you bring, the higher your scoring is. And the five primary are water supply, you know, improving reliability of water supplies, water quality. So often that will relate to like recycled water projects or wastewater projects, flood control protection, groundwater for sustainability of groundwater supplies, and then the fifth is environmental benefits. So each, you know, scoring criteria then is based on those major five categories and lots of different points on the details.
So that means we're doing good when it comes to water.
Yes.
Do you have any?
No.
Okay. Director Repogle?
Yes, I also attended the RWMG and RAC meetings, and as Director Gibson noted, the main topic on the agendas of both of those was recommending or selecting projects to be recommended to the Board of Supervisors for application to the DWR for Prop 1, Round 1 implementation grants. The other projects that were recommended were City of San Luis Obispo, One Water Slow, Nipomo CSD Supplemental Water Project, Los Osos CSD 8th Street Well Construction, San Simeon CSD Reservoir Expansion, and SLO County Flood Control and Water Conservation District for Grant Administration. And I will pass these handouts down. Director Villa, there's some information about the scoring in there. I'm done.
Okay. Director White? No, nothing? Okay. Brings me to Linda. I'll report on the South County Sanitation District meeting last Wednesday. What's going on is a couple meetings ago we were approached by the local trade unions and regarding our redundancy project, and they were asking us to put in place it's called a PLA, which is a project labor agreement. And I'm just going to read what it is for those that aren't familiar, but a project labor agreement, or a PLA, is a pre-hire union labor agreement in which the contract terms and labor conditions are established in advance. Project labor agreements are sought by many to be a way to reduce costs, controlling quality assurance, and minimizing increased labor costs. Others look at project labor agreements as a way to seclude construction projects to union labor exclusively and discriminating against open trade and fair competition. Some project labor agreements include no strike and no lockout agreements. So what our board voted to have our staff look into meeting with the unions and setting up, seeing the possibility of working out a contract, and the only one in the county who's done this is the City of San Luis Obispo. And so they said that we would use that contract as a model for this contract, but our time, we have a very short time to get it done, so this last month of May, they were negotiating back and forth, the union and our staff and attorney, and it took a lot of staff time and a lot of time with our attorney, and they didn't really come to an agreement. There's some points of contention that weren't agreed upon, so it's going back to the drawing board to see if they can come up with an agreement that's satisfactory to both agencies. Our staff has some serious concerns about it, and this redundancy project is the biggest project that the plant's ever taken on, and it's very complicated, and this is like a last minute bureaucracy put on top of what we've already gone through to get the project out to bid. So it's just a lot of unknowns. We don't know if there will be delays, and the costs are unknown. So it's just something that our next meeting will be looking into it again to see if it's something we want to go through with. Our staff, their only interest is the district. They have our best interests at heart, and that's who I'm listening to, you know, who I'm paying attention to on this the most. And so I'm hoping that we can come to some kind of agreement that is going to put the district's best interests as a priority. I know we support workers, but the district's number one, and I'm really, you know, kind of concerned about any delays or any extra costs causing problems down the road for our ratepayers.
Who proposed the PLA, and what were the advantages that were presented?
It was the union, trades union, and they came to our meeting. They filled the room, and the advantages, it's local hire, so they feel like whoever our contractor, they have to hire the local union people first, and the benefits are local people working in a local job, having their name on something local. The money stays here. You don't have out-of-town people coming in. That's the actual benefit.
Right, and then you referred to staff, so that would be the general manager.
Our general manager, our administrator, and our attorney.
Attorney, and what were their points? What were their concerns?
Well, they're concerned about there was the exclusion of the construction manager contract, which we want to exclude that. They don't, and that's something we think should be kept separate, because there's a lot of specialty work. You know, this is not just general construction; it's specialty. So we like to have our own inspectors and people on the job. We've already put that out for bid, Doing this would further delay the schedule, is what they feel. And then there was an indemnification clause that we wanted the union trade groups to indemnify the district for any problems that arose, and they did not want to do that. And they said, that's not our job to indemnify you. You're a contractor. You have that with them. But our attorney feels like if it's not a big deal, then they shouldn't have a problem with having an indemnity agreement, and I agree with that. And then there was arbitration that they basically kind of worked that out. In San Luis Obispo, they're doing it, but when they went out to bid, they only got three bidders bid it, and this is like a big, big job in San Luis Obispo. So that was a concern, is that you don't get as many people wanting to bid these jobs when you have that in place.
Yeah, you may not have a range.
Competition, and we do, it's prevailing wage, so we do, you know, whatever contractor hires, I mean, a lot of these guys probably would be the ones that get hired, but I'm just concerned about the overrun, the cost going way up.
Yeah.
I mean, we've already spent a lot on our attorney and our staff, you know, looking into it and trying to work out a contract, and then they don't seem to want to. We're not really. Well, we'll see what happens next meeting where we come to.
Okay.
Like San Luis Obispo, they did it, but it took them 5 months to come to an agreement, and we're trying to do it in 30 days. So that's a concerning point, that we're going to rush into something that could have a lingering effect on our ratepayers and our plant.
But aren't these union people better trained, usually?
Well, there's nothing wrong with the union people at all. I know they're all excellent workers. Better trained than who?
Than another private.
I don't know. I don't know about who's trained. I would think if you have a licensed contractor who's outbidding work, he would have trained employees or people that they hire. A lot of them are union.
I'm sorry, could you say that again? I couldn't hear the last
I
sentence
said,
over there.
Well, her question was if, you know, the union are more better trained. I mean, I don't know that. I know that union, I was saying the contractors have people they hire. I'm sure they're trained just as, you know, well as anyone else. if they're a legitimate contractor out bidding jobs, they have trained personnel at work, I would assume, you know. So I'll report back after the next meeting.
Thank you.
About what
Thank
happens.
You. Yeah.
Okay. Is there any public comment on the special presentations and reports? Okay, seeing none. Consent agenda. So we have item A, B, C, and D. Is there anybody want to pull anything off the consent agenda? We have a modification on B. So if everybody's good with the consent agenda, then I'll open it to public. Is there any public comment on the consent agenda? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Do we
make a motion? We approve the consent items as modified. Or the consent agenda as modified.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Can we get a roll call, please?
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Pogum?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay. It takes us to our business items. And 9A and B. So 9A is consideration of a recommendation to approve the second amendment to the Five Cities Fire Authority Joint Exercise of Powers Agreement, including funding of $1,062,383 for the 2019-20 budget, a revised funding formula for future years, a requirement for Oceano to hold a special tax ballot measure in March 2020, and a wind-down period terminating Oceano's participation in Five Cities Fire Authority on June 30th, 2021 in the event that the ballot measure does not pass. That's 9A. 9B is a workshop on the budget. So is there any public comment on items 9A or B? Or 9A, we'll do that just first. No, not 9A. So then we'll go ahead. Do you have a presentation on...
Yes, President Austin, members of the board, members of the public, I have a, what will end up being a relatively brief verbal presentation and then questions and answers. The first thing I want to make sure to clarify, however, is that the dollar amount for the funding of the 2019-2020 Five Cities Fire Authority budget has been changed from $1,062,303 to $1,138,148. That discrepancy was, we identified that on Friday while we were putting together the final agenda package. I was doing a little bit of proofing. And essentially what happened is that when the MOA was prepared, the $1,062,000 number was in an analysis that showed what Oceano's obligation would be if the funding formula didn't change for the current year. Right next to that was the obligations of each of the agencies based on the transitional funding formula. So it was just simple error that somebody picked up the wrong column. So again, in doing our final proofing on Friday, I noticed it. We sent out the agenda as it was originally received, because the confirmation of the dollar amounts, we couldn't do the confirmations until this week. When I saw a difference like that, I wanted to make sure that Carrie had the chance to, you know, go through the details and confirm that there wasn't some sort of other underlying issue. From a very general perspective during the negotiation process, we had some numbers that were higher than either the $1,062,000 or the $1,138,000 as Oceano's projection. So when I saw $1,062,000, I saw it was down and expected it to be down from some of the original estimates. But again, it was lower than what we had even hoped for. So again, during the proofing is when we identified the error, and the $1,138,000 is appropriate. Overall, with respect to this item, this time last year, amendment number one was approved by your board, and that amendment was necessary as well, leading to the approval of the Five Cities Fire Authority budget for the current year. The amendment at that time also directed all three agencies to work with Chief Lieberman and to develop amendments to the Five Cities Fire Authority JPA that was originally adopted in 2010, and with special emphasis on looking at the equities of the funding formula. What you have in terms of the amendment number two that's in front of your board right now is also necessary for the approval of the Five Cities Fire Authority budget for next year, and does include a lot of the heavy lifting or the bigger issues in terms of the JPA amendments. I would anticipate that prior to October 1st, which is our final deadline to make JPA amendments, that there might be some additional cleanup language that your board will see for the Joint Powers Authority. So what we wanted to do with the city managers and Chief Lieberman at this point in time is to really bring to the three governing boards the recommendations that we had jointly developed in terms of the funding formula. And as Chief Lieberman mentioned, the city of Arroyo Grande approved the changes last night. Last week, the city of Grover Beach approved the changes in the MOA. The city of Grover Beach will go back to do the technical correction regarding our dollar amount, but it doesn't affect their obligation to the Five Cities Fire Authority budget, and that provides the Five Cities Fire Authority Board of Directors to proceed with budget approval for next year. In speaking to a couple of the items that were listed, first with respect to the funding formula itself, it's very similar to the funding formula that was approved in 2010, with the idea that the assessed valuations of properties within the communities has been deleted. And so we had four factors previously. Each factor weighted at 25%. Now we have three factors, with each factor weighted at one-third or 33.33%. In terms of population, that factor stays the same. In terms of annual calls for service, it's essentially the same, but it's a three-year rolling average in order to smooth out if there's fluctuations that might be significant from one year to another. On the annual calls for service, it's important to note that that's not the calls that are responded from the Oceano station, but instead it's the calls that are provided to the community. And that's important because we know that the Oceano station, about 50% of its calls goes to either Arroyo Grande or Grover Beach. And when it does, those calls are counted as Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach calls and not Oceano calls. The third funding formula that stays, but is slightly modified, was previously based on staffing levels, where the staffing at Arroyo Grande and Grover were three each, and the staffing at Oceano was two. We know that there's now changes in staffing as a result of the strategic plan, and part of the negotiation process led to that each community is really responsible for having a station. If we were not a combined department and we were all still separate and independent, and operating independent fire departments, then we would each have, you know, fixed cost and cost of fire station. And so three communities, three stations, one-third, one-third, one-third with regard to stations. And then the last factor, assessed valuation, which was tossed out, was in part because population covers, in theory, and I'll speak to that in a second, but also assessed valuation, we all recognize that it doesn't really have a direct relationship to the current real property values. Proposition 13 is the basis for assessed valuations, not the real current value of property. The three components that survive then, again, population, because population indicates an overall demand for services. What are we needing to respond to? And that's driven by population. In some ways, assessed valuation could be argued to be similar as well, where assessed valuation, if it was really true properties, is an indication of the value of properties that would be protected. when we see that the vast majority, 80%, maybe more, of service calls are really to people and not for fires, we believe that population is the better factor to determine the overall expectation or demand for services. Annual calls, then, is the actual number of calls that are performed. And then again, as I spoke to in a minute, stations is sort of reflecting that each community has a certain fixed obligation associated with fire and emergency services. On that point, in terms of the funding formula, and I did provide some write-up on, though, I want to pause for a second to see if there's any questions on the funding formula itself. One of the things then that we spoke about in the negotiations, well, without Oceano's limitation based on existing property tax revenues and the need to do a special tax election in March of 2020, plus the fact that Oreo Grande and Grover, the permanent staffing is part of the plan for next year, we sought to have a transitional formula so that this new formula would not go into effect next year, but only part way. And that's what then created the dollar amounts that you see in amendment number 2. And really that transitional formula created that analysis where the one mistake was pretty easy for somebody to make. So in next fiscal year, it's not going to be the full implementation of the new funding formula, but just halfway there. And one of the important points to recall in the amendment is that in the event that the special tax election for Oceano passes next year, then in the following budget, fiscal year 2021, then the new funding formula would go into full effect. In the event that the special tax doesn't pass, then the transitional formula will stay in effect, because 2021, that fiscal year, then would be the final wind down period. So the amendment makes sure to cover both what will the funding formula be next in the following 2021 fiscal year, depending on whether the special tax passes or not. The wind down period is also addressed, which essentially gives about 15 or 16 months. If the special tax election doesn't pass, then during that period of time, there'll have to be discussions with the county regarding potential divestiture and what kind of plan of services the county would provide for Oceano. The process itself would have to go through the local agency formation commission, and so that 15-16 month period for the wind down period would be sufficient for that. And then of course during the wind down period, your board would also have to decide whether you thought that you could, you know, continue a standalone department based on existing revenues. So the wind down period is established, and I felt good about those discussions slash negotiations, because the reality is that Cayucas recently divested or dissolved, Cayucas Fire Protection District dissolved, the county picked up the services. In that situation, Cayucas had already approved a special tax, so both the Cayucas District's general taxes as well as special taxes moved over to the county. But that was a protracted process as well. So it was important to make sure that we had 15 or 16 months in order to make sure that there's a timely transition of services in the event that the special tax doesn't pass. And I think that with that, I'm glad to answer. I do have a revised schedule again for future items. We have pushed back the special tax analysis to, I believe it's July 24th, and we had our initial meeting with Godby Research in order to start working on the community survey. And so we have some revised schedules, and at this point then I'd be glad to answer any questions.
So you had your initial meeting with the survey?
Yes.
And how was
Mr. Godby seemed very not just astute of, you know, fire protection districts and fire services. They'd worked on a number of surveys relating to fire services. Very understanding about a lot of communities transitioning from volunteer fire departments to full-time fire departments. Good experience locally in the Five Cities area with work that he had recently done with Grover Beach, and also good work with special districts in understanding the difference between, you know, special districts like Oceano, where the jurisdiction is relatively limited in comparison to cities where the city's jurisdictions are much more broad. Overall, one of the interesting things that he mentioned, which is really more of a side note than anything else, is that the industry that does these surveys and everything is anticipating that within the next couple years, it's going to be 100% online. And that includes, you know, populations that are relatively older, and the extent to which our elderly populations have now been really engaged, not just in the internet and text messaging and everything else. He even expressed some surprise as to how quickly over the really the last couple years it's been changing. And his comment was that because grandparents want to talk to their grandkids.
And, that's true.
Yeah. So.
So I have a few minor things and then a broader question. First of all, I've recently seen the number $150 per property bandied about. So could we clarify that there's, I don't know where that number comes from, but could we clarify that there's been no determination of what the special tax is going to be?
Yeah, and that's a really good point because Chief Lieberman and I recently were at the Pismo Coast Realtors Group. And we're really clear that we have not and will not be quoting dollar amounts until we're prepared, because we simply don't want to, you know, lead people down a certain path. So that's right. There has been no estimate put out there yet.
And we've also talked about a more equitable distribution based on the land use, right? Not just
yes.
a flat amount.
That's correct. And so the analysis is going forward on that, and Celia's made really significant progress on that. And what we're working on is really a little bit of a blend between the Los Osos formula and the Cayucas formula, just to sort of address, you know, the uniqueness of land uses here in Oceano. But overall, I think that the analysis is looking good, and looking forward to presenting it to your board.
Okay. So in attachment one, it says that the population will be, quote, as most recently determined by the U.S. Census. I just wanted to note that if the immigration question ends up on the 2020 census, that might not give us an accurate number for the population of our local communities.
Yeah, and I would expect that we're going to want to look. I mean, so the U.S. Census is obviously, you know, cornerstone of population evaluations. Previous versions had reflected the California State Department of Finance's population estimates. That was in the original 2010 JPA. And the problem with that is that they'll update them for cities, but in unincorporated areas of counties, they don't do it to specific communities. So it's been hard-pressed there. We talked about different approaches, but we just kind of came down with this as the intent that that is the primary population, you know, number. We want to look at some others like housing and urban development, because if they provide specific Oceano populations, then that would be good. But right now, U.S. Census is sort of the best that we have.
On page 36 of the original packet, it says, during the wind-down period, the party shall establish the distribution of assets currently owned and or in the possession of the JPA, including but not limited to major pieces of apparatus and capital equipment, which will allow Oceano to maintain sufficient apparatus and capital equipment in order to establish an independent fire service. We do have on the schedule on July 10th identification of other fire and emergency services options. And I was just wondering why this couldn't be determined now, because it could help to inform those other options in terms of, you know, what equipment might be available to us if we needed to form an independent fire agency.
So to address what specific pieces of assets would be distributed is sort of going to be a somewhat of a negotiation process in and of itself. There's a little bit where we know that Arroyo Grande has already paid for their share of certain engines versus we and Grover are paying on an annual basis for the debt service. And so there's some other language in that Part B that says if we don't get an asset, then we're not going to be obligated on it anymore. So knowing which specific pieces of assets might go to which agency is a pretty significant work effort in and of itself, and we just don't have the answers to that right now. So it's been addressed in the wind-down period. But the other part of the answer to your question, Director Rapogo, because I think Part A is maybe not as satisfying, but Part B, this is intended to reflect language that was in the 2010 JPA that said, hey, if there is a sort of a dissolution or a parting of the ways, then we have to figure out the equitable distribution of assets. And in so some ways, this is simply restating that provision in the 2010 JPA with newer and maybe better language.
I guess I'm just keying in on the last phrase, will allow Oceano to maintain sufficient apparatus and capital equipment in order to establish an independent fire service. Isn't that something that we could determine in advance? Like, what would we need?
So in the event that the special tax doesn't pass and we're actually there, that would be, you know, one of the first orders of business. But which engine it's actually going to be, whether it's engine 3 or 4, I know we're not going to get the ladder truck. That determination.
But I think if you're setting up an independent fire service, you'd need, you know, this list of equipment. That's what I'm getting at, if that makes sense.
Sure, it's just we're not there yet. You know, in order to go through.
I understand in terms of distributing, you know, what the Five Cities Fire Authority currently has, but in terms of determining what Oceano would need, is that an independent assessment?
Yeah, and we haven't done that independent assessment. You know,
but would that, is that something that's going to be done for the July 10th meeting?
No, with the identification of. No, for July 10th, we're going to be talking much more in big picture than getting into specifics of, you know, how many feet of hoses do you have. Mm-hmm. Literally, when we talk about Five Cities Fire Authority, if we're distributing assets, we're looking at how many hoses are going to be distributed, not just the big equipment. But in terms of running an independent fire department, that's going to be done more in a very big picture type of situation as opposed to getting into the details of what are all the individual pieces of equipment or apparatus.
Okay. So now the bigger question. In the new packet, it says the district's cost of Five Cities Fire Authority operations for fiscal year 2019-20 will increase by $75,765 to $1,138,148. With a new transitional formula, but the $1,138,148 number is actually $151,000 more than what we're paying this year, and it's $76,000 more than is in the proposed budget that we're going to be talking about soon. And then on page 35, it says section 3, above for the fiscal year 2019-20, Five Cities Fire Authority budget shall be the same in fiscal year 2020-2021. So we're committing to, over the 2 years, an increase of $302,000 above what we're currently paying. So the question is, how are we paying for this?
So it's still $150,000 per year, $302,000 for a two-year period.
Over the 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, and Carrie will be running through the budget numbers, but it's essentially existing reserves that we have within the general fund.
And if we weren't using the reserves for this purpose, what would we be using them for? Or is there a generally accepted principles for how much you should be holding in reserves that we're not dipping below that number?
Well, there's a couple questions embedded in that one. In terms of our governmental services, the two that we have right now are fire authority and lighting. That's our about 95%, or I should back that up, about 5% roughly of our general fund revenues go to the lighting fund, and the remainder of it goes to the fire fund. So there's, in terms of using those general fund reserves, we could install more street lights. They could, those reserves could be used to help subsidize water and sewer operations. But as reserves, they're not revenues that flow in on an annual basis. So normally, if you're going to expend reserves, it's looked for one-time purposes. Now, with respect to the Five Cities Fire Authority and implementation of the strategic plan, there are obviously ongoing costs. The use of the reserves are really one-time stopgap measures in order to fund the strategic plan for the next year and then potentially the year after that. But as reserves, they're not available for over long-term, you know, ongoing operational purposes. It's, you know, short-term, one-time money. With respect to any minimum thresholds, generally accepted accounting principles don't really get into that. It's really for board's discretion. In general fund operations, it typically is reserves are set aside for things like facilities for this, you know, the structure, for capital replacement. Right now, if we stay in Five Cities Fire Authority, one of the primary objectives is to try to get the housing that's somewhat temporary in nature. The district previously had some architectural renderings of establishing permanent housing for the fire staff here. So that would be something that would have been, you know, a primary target is still going to be fire and emergency services related. Out of the general fund reserves, which right now are somewhat over $600,000, Carrie, I think those include the public facilities fees, which are, and those are specifically for fire and equipment, equipment apparatus relating to fire operations. When we come back to the board with the final budget in August, we'll look at utilizing some of those reserves that are specifically restricted for fire-related equipment and matching those up with equipment-related charges that we have in next year's budget. And the reason for doing that is that to the extent that some of the general fund reserves are more discretionary, and we want to be able to preserve those to the greatest degree possible for, you know, board decisions. But in any case, you know, the, you know, with respect to the funding of the implementation of the strategic plan in Five Cities Fire Authority, yes, the district needs to be able to utilize reserves in order to fund next year's budget, and then even potentially the following year's budget prior to July 1st of 2021 when there will be a new type of fire service and emergency services provided to Oceano if the special tax doesn't pass.
So is it reasonable to think of the reserves as like a savings account that into for emergencies?
Yeah, savings account, emergencies, you know, you set aside like, you know, roof repairs, other unusual events, kind of like what's going on with the implementation of the strategic plan.
So I guess my question is really getting at, do we have enough in our savings account to pay the extra $302,000 over the next couple years without putting ourselves at risk for not having enough left in our savings account if we have an emergency need for it, for example?
One is that very point was why establishing a transitional funding formula was important. Because we could not, Oceano could not afford to go into the new funding formula for this year and next year. The additional costs would have not been fundable. And so we needed to be able to, and the cities agreed, you know, to this transitional funding formula based on our existing limitations. In terms of having enough money in the savings account, if we have like a major, you know, earthquake or some other thing, you know, districts like ours are always going to be a little bit hard-pressed, but then we turn to not just the general fund reserves, but all the reserves within the district, and those are a few million dollars. When the San Simeon earthquake hit, and there was a lot of line breaks, and FEMA ended up paying for a lot of it, but that was about a $3 million project. So I'm always going to be concerned about the adequacy in the case of, you know, natural disasters and those kind of emergencies. But in terms of the ones that you would normally expect, we're in an okay position with respect to reserves, better than some of the other local special districts that even have larger budgets than ours. But I'm never going to be one that says we're more than flush with reserves.
So is there any reason that we need to make a decision on this tonight? I believe we have until September to finalize things.
No, the September date that you may be thinking about is really the adoption of the final budget for the district prior to September 1st. Prior to July 1st, the board is obligated to adopt a preliminary budget. The difference between a preliminary budget and a final budget is that the preliminary budget just simply sets the revenue and expenditure plans for next year. The final budget incorporates reserve analysis once staff has had the chance to close out the current year's accounting. But with respect to the immediacy of the decision tonight, it's important because the Five Cities Fire Authority has to adopt their budget for next year. And so this amendment number two provides Vice President White with the ability to go to Five Cities Fire Authority and vote in support of the budget, just like last year. Amendment number one provided that ability to get the current year's budget approved.
My concern is things seem a little out of order to me here, because it's not until July 10th that we discuss the identification of other options. So I would like to hear those other options before committing to...
But those other options don't have any play with respect to next year's Five Cities Fire Authority budget.
So it's not just next year we're committing. We're committing for a longer period of time. We're committing for at least $302,000 over 2 years above what we're paying for the current year. So... I mean, that's a big chunk of money for a disadvantaged community. We don't have the resources that cities have to draw on from sales taxes and tourist taxes and other ways that they have to generate revenue.
Well, so, and certainly that is well understood. It's been well understood in the discussions with the city of Rio Grande and the city of Grover Beach, and that is all well understood, you know, at the Five Cities Fire Authority Board as well. And so what we have in front of your board today is the best results of a negotiation effort that went on with the two cities.
Could we postpone it until later in July after we hear about the other options?
The other options do not have an impact on next year's Five Cities Fire Authority budget. Those other options are relevant in the event that the special tax next March does not pass. So the July 10th and the other things that we have listed are really the homework leading up to your board's calling for the special tax election in October. And those are, you know, again, if the special tax doesn't pass, then we have to provide fire and emergency services in fiscal year 2021. And in 21-22, it's either going to be living within our means, which means don't use any more reserves, or it's going to be a transition of fire and emergency services to the county of San Luis Obispo. So again, this item that's in front of you today is the result of, you know, the last year's effort with the cities and the best plan that we could come up with for this transitional period until we find out what might be the future of fire and emergency services in Oceano. Other than that, I think the comments are more appropriately directed to your fellow board members than myself.
Well, I would just say that our duty is to supply emergency medical and fire services to Oceano, and this is what we're doing. and what's going to happen a year from now. This is, that's then and this is now, and we've got to move forward now to keep fire trucks rolling. So what's going to happen 2 years from now, really, technically, a year and a half, you know, July 2020. That's a year. Yeah. But what's going to happen then has really, it's relevant, but it's not, we still have to approve a budget for the next year. And because I don't really see, this is a personal thing, somebody who's studied this and watched this and been involved in this, until the community decides what they want, we need to continue. And after that is when we are going to, only after that tax are we going to be able to really decide if they don't want the Five Cities Fire Authority, what kind of fire service they're going to have. Because there are many options. They're all going to be equally expensive or more, but, you know, so this kind of money we're spending this year, we're going to have to spend in the future anyway, one way or the other. There's no way to get out of paying for fire service for the community of Oceana. Cal Fire is not a cheaper option. Putting together our own fire service is equally costly to Cal Fire, Five Cities.
This was a big calculation mistake. I mean, it went from being $150,000 more over the 2 years than what we're paying now to $300,000. So where do we get to a point where it's just too painful to continue? I mean, if the mistake had been it's going to be an extra $500,000?
No, I wanted to try to clarify that statement in my initial comments. So during the last several months and working through numbers, my expectation was that the transitional formula would even be slightly higher than the $1,138,000. So all of our calculations, this $1,138,000 is not a surprise. It's not an error in terms of somebody doing calculations. It was simply an error of somebody picking up the wrong number off of the analysis that was done and putting it into the NMOA. So it's not like a surprise that this number is going to change yet again. I think part of the challenges here, and not uncommon for local agency boards such as yourself, is that whereas you often have decisions that are purely for you to make at your own discretion, Five Cities Fire Authority is a joint powers. It's a partnership with the cities of Aurora Grande and Grover Beach. And as part of a partnership, it's, you know, sit down and go through details. Two members of the board were part of an ad hoc that met with the mayors of Grover Beach and Aurora Grande and a couple city council members as well a few months ago, in order to address some of these items that were being discussed. So in partnerships between local agencies, it can sometimes be difficult because what we might want as a local agency is give and take with what some of the other agencies might want. I will state that the funding formula that we arrived at is by no stretch the funding formula that one of the other agencies started with. So there was give and take on a number of different, and then we did constraints analysis as well as to say what do we think we all might be able to afford perhaps in the future. And that's where the strategic plan itself, where it has numerous different measures that are desired, the Five Cities Fire Authority Board said we're not going to be able to fund all those measures, and they had to draw a line in terms of what might be accomplished and what might not be accomplished. So in these interagency partnerships, there are a lot of give and takes. And, you know, again, I think this is the best result that we could, the best and most balanced result that we could hope to achieve in the discussions with the two cities.
Okay, so these numbers were not a surprise to you, and those are the numbers that you were considering relative to how much we're taking out of our reserves.
Yeah, the $1,138,000.
And you're comfortable with that level of dipping into the reserves?
Yes. I mean, ideally we don't have to, but I think when we sat down with the cities and looked at the the whole combined, that this was a, you know, a best solution, the most reasonable solution that we could come up with.
Okay, thank you.
So we are committing for 2 years?
Yes, and in some respects, the two cities have agreed to 2 years, because remember, if the March 2020 doesn't pass, they've agreed to the transitional formula and keeping us on board for 15, 16 months. Certainly, it's easier for us to say we want to stay on board, but if the special tax doesn't pass, it was a little bit more difficult for the cities to agree to, you know, a 15, 16-month winding down period. Some of the discussions had been talking about the wind down would be done by December 1st, 2020, and I was just like, you know, that just, there's no way. It doesn't give us enough time to figure out what Oceano is going to do. So again, a good example of sort of a give and take.
I had a couple questions. So if the fire tax doesn't pass, then we have a wind down period of 15 to 16 months, something like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And during that time period, then the employees are still part of the fire authority?
Yeah, they're actually employees of the city of Rio Grande.
Okay.
And they would continue to be city employees, yes.
Okay. So during that time period, then everything on this list is going to be addressed at some point?
Right? Yes.
Okay. Okay, I think that's my questions for now.
Jimmy. So this is the ultimate decision is up to our voters, our ratepayers, what they want to do. And in order to get the right information out to them, because like it's brought up, there are people from outside the community that are going on radio stations and things and talking about Oceano and putting everything in a negative light that don't know what, you know, what the facts are here. So how do we, August 14th is when we will start our public information. Is that, until then, we're not going to be, I mean, kind of explain how we're going to, we're going to do the survey first and then.
Yes, and I want to kind of reiterate that the workshops that your board has already been having, like legal counsel provided a bit of the do's and don'ts associated with an actual election, what can board members do and not do. We know that we can't use any public funds to try to advocate for a vote. I think that legal counsel's statement in general to your board was on your own time and on your own dime.
Right.
So what we've been doing over the last several meetings is kind of going through that background information, and we'll continue to do that. And then once we have the results of the survey, and we've sort of completed the homework, if you will, including the uncertainties about how would we operate an independent fire department, or what might be the conditions that the county would impose, or, you know, in development of a plan if they were to provide the services. So there's uncertainties, there's things we won't know, and then there's things that we will know. And then putting the public information materials together between August and October is really the crunch time period on that. Because once your board calls for an election in October, we essentially don't want to be producing any new materials after that.
Right.
After that, responding to questions and answers and community dialogue is fine. Going and talking to, you know, the Rotary groups or whomever might be interested, like, you know, the Central Coast Board of Realtors. That's all good, but really between August and October, we want to, you know, conclude whatever information we want
to
develop and put out there.
Yeah. Voters and property owners.
I'm ready to make a motion if there's no further discussion.
Is there any further discussion? Did we have public comment yet? Okay.
I don't know if you want to ask Chief Lieberman, not as a member of the public, but as our fire chief, whether or not he had any other thoughts or comments that he might want to share.
Do you have any other thoughts or comments, Chief Lieberman?
Mm-hmm.
The short answer would be I have lots of thoughts and comments. Let me try to narrow those down. I think a lot of legwork has already gone into this process with the managers, and I think Mr. Ogren shared something that's very relevant in that this is not just an Oceano conversation. Tonight you're taking Oceano-specific action, but there is a negotiation and a give and take. As an example, at last evening's Arroyo Grande meeting, the mayor of Arroyo Grande said to their city manager, but I believe we gave you a list of items that we wanted to get through the JPA negotiation process with you. Where are you on those list of items? And the city manager said, our priority is to get through this transitional funding formula negotiation, and then we will address the other issues of the JPA. But even that city manager said, but it's a process of negotiation with other partners. And so there's going to be a lot of honest conversation and a lot of give and take, and I get to sit there as an observer and facilitator more than a decision maker before information's brought back to you folks for consideration. I believe, you know, we know what goes on a fire engine. We know how much hose and which tools and which equipment are typically on a Type 1 fire engine. It's that part's not hard to figure out, but it's all the other equipment. It gets down to the office equipment, the computers and the chairs and everything else that has to be inventoried, and it's a pretty long process. And we didn't talk about liability. So as part of this wind-down process, not only is it going to be how do we equip ourselves with a fire engine, it's going to be fractional percentages of PERS liability and these other business and big decisions that the communities are going to have to negotiate through. So I believe that the time that the managers brought to each of their represented boards was appropriate to spend time to make a really comprehensive and good conversation to bring back to you for ultimate decisions. And I think I'll stop there, unless you have questions.
No, that's very good. Thank you. Anybody have any questions? I know there have been months of meetings and negotiations, and I appreciate all the work that's been done with them. The two cities and our general manager. Thank you.
I know that sometimes responses to board questions.
I recognize responses to board questions can still sometimes be lacking or seem lacking. The negotiation process and what Oceano is really facing for the next year or two. I want to kind of go back in. Probably around April of last year, Vice President White was in a situation where she's potentially vetoing budget proposals at Five Cities Fire Authority. It had gotten to the point where it was really pretty tenuous in terms of keeping the three agencies together. I think we're in a vastly improved situation today in terms of the understanding between the communities of the different challenges that we have and what we're seeking to accomplish, again, vastly improved over where we were probably March or April of last year when, we were looking at potential vetoes and really some, draconian measures in terms of a partnership going. So. Hopefully this will work out, but we know that there's a couple years, at least through March of 2020, and then potentially after that, where there's going to have to be a lot of hard decision-making in terms of how fire and emergency services will be provided to Oceano. Last comment is that the League of California Cities just put out in May a new guide on Proposition 28 and Prop 62 or 26, I can't remember which. 26, and it specifically spoke, it was a relatively small section, but specifically spoke to the challenges of fire departments that are transitioning from volunteer fire departments to full-time paid fire. So this challenge that we're seeing here is repeating itself, in many different communities throughout the state. Not that that makes any of us feel any better, but it is reflective of the type of challenge that we have and that exists throughout California and a lot of small unincorporated communities.
I want to thank you for answering my questions. It helps me to make, all of us to make better informed decisions.
Okay, did we have a motion on
this? Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve the Second Amendment to the Five Cities Fire Authority joint exercise of powers agreement, including funding of $1,062,300. Nope.
No, it's $1,001,000. It's as modified, which is the $1,138,148.
With that correction, for 2019-20/20, Five Cities Fire Authority budget, a revised funding formula for future years, a requirement for Oceana to hold a special tax ballot measure in March 2020, and a wind-down period terminating Oceana's participation in the Five Cities Fire Authority on June 30, 2021, in the event that the ballot measure does not pass.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Can we get a roll call, please?
Can we hold just for one quick second? What Director Gibson did is reflected what the subject matter was,
yeah,
as opposed to the recommendation. So I just wanted to give the the preference. So and apologize, Director Gibson, but you know, on the subject matters, we tend to be a little bit more general. And the challenge with the motion as it's currently made is that it could be interpreted to limit, you know, be limiting in comparison to what the actual Second Amendment is. And so when we look to the recommendations, number one and two, a more simple motion would be to approve staff recommendations as amended, or to sort of reiterate what the recommendations are as opposed to the subject of the agenda item, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So moved.
And then the second.
Second is modified.
Second modified. The second with this modified motion.
So to clarify, my understanding of Director Gibson's modified motion is to approve staff recommendations as modified.
That's correct.
And who was the?
Second.
Okay. And the second concurs?
Second concurs.
Okay. I think we're good.
We have a roll call, please.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Opobo?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay. We'll move on now to item 9B, which is workshop on the 2019-20 budget.
Tony.
So are we going to have a little slideshow?
Yes. Our business and accounting manager, Ms. Cassiola, is going to provide the presentation to your board.
President Austin, members of the board, item 9B is the workshop for the 2019-20 budget. So the objectives of this workshop are to review the general and enterprise funds, and then review each fund individually, and then lastly go over the significant items of each fund. So the overall or overview on the general fund revenues is that they are decreasing from $2,460,521 to $2,356,205, and this is mostly due to grants that we had received last year, and the lowering of the administrative cost reimbursement. And but this is also because the property taxes are increasing from $998,000 about to $1,050,000. So on the expenditure side, they are increasing from $2,406,000 about to $2,420,000, and this is mostly from the increase from the fire fund. It's jumping from, this is total, not just what you approved in item 9A. So it would be other things like utilities that are in there and staff time. So it's jumping from last year's budget from $1,058,000 to $1,185,000. For this next proposed budget.
And Carrie, those numbers do reflect the changes in the Second Amendment that your board just, that the board just approved.
Correct. Yeah, but the worksheets in the back that were provided with your agenda are not reflecting that.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. Yeah, and when we bring back the preliminary budget at the end of June, we'll have that number in there updated. All right. So the deficit in the general fund for the proposed budget is a little over $90,000. So this does include the Five Cities Fire costs that you guys just approved in 9A. Because the original one published, I believe, just said $15,000, so $75,000 increase. So that deficit results from the transitioning funding formula from Five Cities Fire, and that would just decrease the reserves in the general fund from $626,000 to $535,000, about.
And I'll try not to interject too much.
No, please.
But the point here is that some of the increases in the Five Cities Fire Authority budget were fundable within existing revenues, and that's why the use of reserves is $90,000 and not at a higher amount, like $150,000 or so.
Thanks for the explanation.
Yeah, property taxes are jumping from, $998,000 to $1,050,000, so that's helping. That's projected from the county. They give us projections each year. And they tend to come in a little higher than what they projected, but we don't like to bank on that. So then, significant items in the fire fund. There's a couple things. The implementation of the strategic plan from Five Cities Fire, which started last year, and then the transitioning formula for Five Cities Fire. And then, obviously, fire costs for the next coming years are going to be determined based off what happens during the special tax, and that will be determined in March. So other funds in the general fund are primarily pretty much the same as last year. We have no significant changes in the lighting fund, just increased it just a little bit with staff time and a little bit with utilities and parts. Facilities, no significant cost. It should be noted that the rental income that we received from the sheriff's building has been used as an interfund debt payment back to the sewer fund. That was approved, I think, in 2016, and that will end right at the 2022-23 budget. And also bids for the emergency generator are going out. And about $46,000 of that is going to be used for reserves to be paid for, so that'll be encumbered. You won't see that until the preliminary budget. We haven't done encumbrances, but the other half is funded with the grant that Chief Lieberman helped us get with the nuclear prepared. Yeah. Thank you. So then the enterprise budget, the enterprise funds. So the revenues are decreasing there, and most of the decreases are coming in water sales. The community continues to successfully conserve since the 2015 rate increase, and when the drought was hitting, they've continued to we've been selling less than we projected from back then. The budget also reflects a decrease in grants that we received this year, but as Director Gibson noted, we'll be receiving more. So that's not counted in this budget, but it'll be a budget adjustment once it's received. So thank you. So enterprise expenditures. So they're decreasing from last year by over $500,000, mostly due to capital outlay. Those are items that we make budget adjustments for or plan for, and right now we don't have any large items on this budget. So that is for the larger increase.
So a couple examples over the past was the emergency project underneath the Oceano Lagoon for the waterline replacement, Air Park Drive, waterline reclaim, and the drainage project, which we've budgeted. So we had, you know, some major projects over the last couple of years that needed to be paid out of necessity. Again, Carrie reflected. I just wanted to speak to what had we been spending that nearly $600,000 in capital outlay over the last couple of years.
So then significant items in the water fund. So revenues are down from the conservation. The increased estate water, which we made a budget adjustment for last year, it'll continue to rise. And then the increase that we made last year on last year's budget, where we increased the administrative allocation to the water fund by 15%, the sewer fund in the past had been charged 40% and the water fund 45%. And we did an analysis where we went back 3 years on the labor to see what would more appropriately fit the funds. And it came out to 65% with the water fund and 30% with the sewer fund with our time, seeing that we sell more water than deal with the, we don't treat, we just do maintenance of the sewer and collection. So water fund significant items. So the estimated budget deficit is coming in over $500,000. The available funds from this year's current savings of this budget is $321,000 about, and that will cover 64% of this deficit. So this will reduce the reserves by $182,000 and decreasing the water's reserves to $1,224,054. This shows that a rate increase in analysis definitely needs to be addressed. This is the fifth year of Ordinance 2015-1, where the rates were first increased. So we've been increasing them each year by CPI since 2015, and this will be the fifth year that they've been increased, and it's time for us to do another analysis on what the new rate would be increased by. And this graph was included in the budget narrative that we put together this year. And it shows the revenues behind, so the expenses are the bar and the revenues are behind it. It shows how this year we received the lighter blue above is grant revenue. And you can see we had the yellow expense, and this is the second bar graph from the left. The yellow is the CPI, so when we received the grants, we were doing capital A outlay projects and things we normally wouldn't do. And you can see the green, the orange, and the kind of brownish color. Those are more like operating, so we have personnel at the bottom. The orange is the supplies and services, where you can see state water has increased a lot, and then the green is administrative costs. And then the dark blue, that starts from the bottom and kind of hits right around the middle of the green, is our operating revenues for the water fund. So you can see they are falling short. And the grant revenues, like I said, are only in this year, and we haven't budgeted for the next. So then the wastewater fund, we're running at a surplus of $34,000 about, but it's important to note that the interfund transfer from the facilities fund to the wastewater fund is done every year, and that's because the wastewater fund and water fund first helped construct that building, and then later, had, I believe in 2015, we reorganized it to be in the facilities fund because it was they were recording rental income to the water and waste fund, and that wasn't really appropriate. So that was rearranged, and now there's an interfund payment made to the wastewater fund, and it's important to note that because that will end in 22-23. And if it wasn't for that interfund interest payment, the wastewater fund would be running at a deficit of $67,000, And the wastewater fund also needs something similar to the WRRP, where we do an analysis on what the capital improvements need to be and what the rates would be to fund those capital improvements. So it's important to note that that needs to be done too. And I think this graph, this next graph will show how similar to the water fund, we have our personnel costs at the bottom, supplies and services, administrative costs, and then the kind of the pinkish above is that inner fund, which basically balances that budget. And it's important to note that if it wasn't for that, we would be at a deficit. So then other enterprise funds is garbage fund. Really has no significant changes. The reserves are approximately at $325,000. And then the other one is the equipment fund. And the reserves are approximately at $25,000. And right now, we just have a debt payment for the dump truck in there and fuel and stuff like that. But it's pretty minimal at this time. So with that, we'll – oh, wait. Sorry. So one item in the budget narrative that we had asked for board direction on is the existing positions that we have. And right now in the field, we have four field crew. The change we're considering is having the utilities supervisor come to more of like a project manager with the WRRP, the Water Resource Reliability Program, with all the projects we're getting and the grant money we're getting to fund those projects. And with that, that position would be more of a managerial and not so much manual and working on the crew with digging the holes and things like that. And that would create the opportunity for a position like a lead operator who would obviously have a step increase, because right now it's just a supervisor and three operators. And that's a position we were exploring since the WRRP is coming into play, and we're looking for board direction on that. And in your budget worksheets, it reflects what the current positions are at, so that has not been adjusted for in your budget workshop papers today. So with that, sorry, now, any questions or comments, or we're ready to take notes?
So, Paula, did you have, are we ready to just ask questions?
Yes.
Can you go in more detail on the what we just talked about, the project manager, and just kind of give us more?
Yes. In fact, it kind of gives me the opportunity to talk a little bit about what we've accomplished over the last several years with respect to staffing, you know, overall. When we see, you know, the biggest concern with the budget is clearly the water fund's operating deficit. I say budget. The biggest concern about future services is fire and emergency services. The big distinction because of Proposition 13 and tax reform in California is that the voters in the community of Oceano are going to make the decision on the special tax. With respect to what to do about the water fund in the future, that decision really substantially rests with your board. So one of the questions that I think is obvious is, well, how is it that we've moved to a point where we have essentially about a $500,000 structural deficit in the budget from about 4 or 5 years ago when the most recent Prop 218 rate increase was approved? And as Carrie mentioned, since then, consumer price index adjustments have also increased rates. And in so some respects, we say, well, this deficit is really resulting because our costs are increasing at higher than the rate of inflation. That's part of it. Carrie also explained that conservation is still well and alive in Oceano, so that there's been some significant revenue shortfalls. She provided analysis that since the drought ended, our overall revenue shortfall has been around $260,000 or $290,000. The revenue so we had to cut back on the revenue projections for next year, and that contributes about $130,000 to the projected deficit. So if a deficit's $500,000 and roughly $130,000 of that is revenue related, the other $370,000 is expenditure related. And so what is it that's been running faster than the rate of inflation? Pretty much it's the cost associated with both the increases in state water costs as well as the change in the administrative cost allocations themselves, where we shifted costs from the wastewater fund over to the water fund. Now, on state water itself, because there is what's called a pass-through in the Prop 218 ordinance, that we can pass on those costs to customers every year, even if they're greater than the rate of inflation. But the hitch in there is that when the rates were adopted in 2015, the baseline under state water was much higher. And then what we saw is we saw decreases in state water costs, and those decreases in state water costs in like 15, 16, and 16, 17 ended up paying for higher costs that we're seeing in other categories. So, you know, I'm taking a really long way to get to President Austin's question regarding the staffing, but the basic challenges are increases in costs associated with state water, some other, you know, miscellaneous costs. But with respect to labor itself, I need to be a little bit careful because the bar graph showed that our labor costs are relatively smaller in comparison to services and supplies in the overall budget. A lot of local agencies, especially those who are really having a lot of unfunded liabilities associated with CalPERS, are the types of agencies where labor is a very large percentage of costs. Ours aren't, because we, you know, again, we buy a lot of water, both Lopez and state water. So in staffing, though, those costs have risen much greater than the rate of inflation. And I make this point because it's been really a conscientious effort through the renegotiations with the union about bringing up salaries for, you know, really everybody, the 3.6 full-time equivalents in the office, excluding me, and the four in the field, to bring those salaries up to comparables of what other agencies are paying. Prior to a few years ago, it seemed like Oceano had taken the position of, well, we can't afford to pay comparable. And the challenge with that position is, of course, then that people leave and they go work someplace else. We have turnover, lack of consistency, and that ends up hurting more. So the first MOU that expired through 2018, it was a multi-year effort to bring up wages to comparables. And then the current MOU that goes through 2023 is a five-year MOU, which is really good. That's bringing the health benefits up. And so those are pushing labor costs faster than the rate of inflation. Now, on a good news is that Oceano has zero post-retirement health care obligations to anybody who, you know, retires. There's other communities where they pay for 100% of the post-retirement health benefits, and yet others that will pay a large share. So when we talk about the need to bring up wages to comparable and health benefits, especially considering increases in health insurance, the board has stayed pretty firm on no post-retirement health benefits as a you know, part of budgetary controls. So with that said, and what I really think has been a lot of good work in accomplishing, you know, a strong field crew and a really strong office crew, why are we thinking about then some additional changes? And we're not talking about adding new people, and therefore whatever budgetary implications would exist are going to be relatively minor. But it's simply looking at what are going to be the major challenges for our utility operations moving forward, and that is the implementation of all these capital projects. And even now when we were finishing up the packaging for the emergency generator Tony was working with Cummings, the electrical, the generator manufacturer, to make sure that we were getting the right documents into our bid package for the contractor for installation. And that's the type of work that Tony's going to have to do more and more as projects are getting developed. Another example is on the design of the North Swing Pershing Waterline Replacement Project, which is next on the shelf to get out to bid. Tony will sit down and review the design engineer's plans. And so, for example, he identified, you know, hydrant replacements that needed to be incorporated into the design as well. And so this discussion about getting board feedback of considering changes in positions and responsibilities is really initial. But what we really see is the need for, you know, Tony to be able to work with the design engineers or work with office staff on the capital projects delivery while he's still supervising, you know, the field crews overall. But when the three-person field crew then is in the office and responding to, when they're in the field and responding to a particular issue, let's say there's a water line break, they still need to have somebody in the field who's in charge at that point in time. And so that would be looking at taking one of the, deleting one of the operator positions and then creating a lead operator position. So what we're trying to do is identify what are the future responsibilities that staff will need to fulfill and talk with your board in real general context right now. Those kind of discussions ultimately, if we're going to create a lead position, creation of job specifications has to come back to your board. There's a certain amount of review that we would do with union representatives. But we wanted to at least initiate the discussion right now and get some board feedback because we think it's important as a predecessory step to what we're seeing as the need for, you know, addressing the capital project replacement programs down the road.
Great. Thanks for that explanation.
Thank you.
Perfect sense to me.
So we're not adding any positions. We're just creating new responsibilities for some of the...
Yeah, so changing in some responsibilities, you know, for Tony itself, it would be changing it to a management position, so he would no longer get any overtime. The fiscal impact typically is pretty negligible in that case, because in changing the position, it's a higher salary, but no overtime. Modifying one of the operator positions to a lead position would have some salary implications. I not really could make a good guess right now, but you know, whether that's a 10 or a 15 or a 20% over time, doesn't usually, it's not 15% on day one, but for one position, yeah, there would be some fiscal implications. Despite the, you know, overall concerns of the water fund, again, labor is a relatively small component, so when we're talking about not adding positions but reclassifying some positions, and there would be some incremental changes on wages, even for the labor budget, that's going to be relatively small. And then because labor is a small component of the overall budget, then the overall budgetary impacts would be relatively minor.
Okay, anyone else have any?
That makes sense to me to do that.
Do we need to vote on, or just give our consensus?
No, you don't. You don't need to. This is just a workshop. In fact, there's no need to, you know, unless your board is inclined to give formal direction on something, it's not necessary. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant with respect to that item or any other kind of direction. So we know on the budget worksheets we need to make modifications for the Five Cities Fire Authority budget. This discussion doesn't require any modifications on that. And in fact, under personnel type of issues, as we get into some of those details, some of that might actually be covered in closed session. But
so when will the rate increase analyses be performed for water and wastewater?
So I think the higher priority is for water right now. Wastewater, if it's not done next year, is going to be okay, but definitely needs to be done in the next couple years. for wastewater, we need to line up the engineering firm in order to do some evaluations of what the cost of a capital improvement program is going to be. For water, because of the basic structural deficit, it really needs to be done this upcoming fiscal year, and I'm envisioning more of the second half of the fiscal year, because as Cannon is the engineering firm that's doing our water capital improvement program evaluations. As they're wrapping that up, and it'll be in front of your board, basically the rough number I'm comfortable talking about, because they've provided the draft report, but we've got roughly around $4 million of deferred infrastructure, and those projects can be phased in over time. But through what our next steps through the remaining of the fiscal year is to start working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture under funding programs and the State Water Board under funding programs, because we have to take those capital improvement costs, figure out how we're going to phase them, how are we going to fund them, are there still yet other grant opportunities, and then ultimately what's the local share that the community is going to bear. And so those steps associated with looking at the funding alternatives and what those long-term costs would be, we need to take that step before we jump into the rate analysis. So I think that step one through the remainder of this calendar year and early into next calendar year, and then step two is rate consulting work, first 6 months or so of next calendar year.
So the reason that the wastewater analysis can be put off for a few years is it's just not running at such a big deficit?
Because of the interfund transfers, they're still running in a net surplus.
Okay.
I
noticed that there's no capital outlays budgeted for water and wastewater. Is that because whatever is going to be done is going to be offset by grants, or what's the reason that it's not in there?
For the most part, it's going to be offset by grants. The North Swing and Pershing job, the grant funding is not going to be available soon enough. And so in that one, when we go out to bid, we'll simply have to come back. Once we have the bids in, then propose a budget adjustment based on the results of those bids.
Can you remind me again what the $45,000 for the lighting cost is? What is that for, electricity?
Yes.
Are we installing new lights? Or
no, that's electricity.
It's that much? Huh?
Yes. Wow. I can't remember what our number is, I mean, in terms of how many street lights we have. And the costs have been a little bit flat because of the conversion to LED lights. But yeah, it's power costs.
I was wondering, on page 61, there's $2,000 allocated for board member travel. Is there, what's planned for board member travel that's going to be that much money? It was like a big increase over prior years.
What page were you on?
61. Board member travel.
Yeah. We honestly don't have a lot of board member travel, but in the event that we did, that can also cover conferences. But it's our overall training and travel budget is pretty limited here. And
so there's nothing in particular that's...
So our estimated costs are relatively low. I'd say that the $2,000 is probably consistent with how much we budget every year, Carrie.
Yeah.
It's just,
and
you
then
know.
The left-hand columns are the actual, so we normally don't use it. We try to pick trainings close, in San Luis.
Yeah.
Is that also true for, on page 82 and 87, there's there's a spider. There's a... there's a $10,000 and $2,800 budgeted for classes and seminars. Is that
So the increase for class, was that it?
Yeah, okay. Is that the similar situation to the budgeting for the
Yeah, so travel? For the increases for classes, we put an extra $5,000 this year because for the new operator and trainer, we plan on getting his distribution license D1 and T1. And so we budgeted that to include him, but normally it would be closer to the actual numbers next to it to the left.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then on page 87... Get down there. Oh, yeah, like a third of the way down, system parts operating supplies is 8,000, which is like a lot higher than the last few years. Why is that expected to?
Yeah, again, that's going to be. An amount that is consistently budgeted, even though we don't always spend that. And what happens is sometimes we end up spending more money on something like maintenance of sewer structure and improvements and less money on system parts and operating supplies. So the individual line items are sometimes not precise as much it is when you take them as a group, we tend to have more level expenditure plans. It's just in some years, you know, supplies might be higher, maintenance of sewer structures might be lower. And so what you see is an amount that we try to consistently budget, even though we might find actual expenditures hit different areas.
Okay, and then I just had a general question, which is with respect to sea level rise planning, is that something that we need to be looking at, or does the county take care of that? I mean, I'm thinking in particular of like the lift station on Pier Avenue that's 30 feet underground.
Yes.
And built in 1964. So if that needs to be relocated because of sea level rise concerns, should that be something, not necessarily in this budget, but is that something we need to be thinking about going forward?
Well, it's certainly us and not the county. We can pretty much figure that the county will provide us zero support on our infrastructure.
But, I mean, do they do any studies to assist with that?
Or they've coordinated with others like USGS, who's recently done some pretty extensive studying. So, you know, kind of keeping track of that. Some of the coastal retreat policies and stuff are really focusing on your major facilities, like treatment plants, like the discussion that's been happening at the sanitation district. We, as an entity that is primarily a pipeline entity, right? We don't have a water treatment plant and we don't have a wastewater treatment plant. We have wells, and so even wells have to be thought about in terms of seawater. Sea level rise, because as the sea level rises, that interface between the freshwater and the groundwater or saltwater will start moving inland as well. But in terms of sort of concrete actions that we can take, I think you're really speaking to the lift station, because our pipelines are a matter of replacing the pipelines, trying to get them sealed as well as possible. And so with respect to the lift station, that is a priority. I've been in recent conversations with one of the local engineering firms who's got a program. They hire a bunch of interns in order to help mentor interns, and so they assign a lead engineer with an intern, and then they give the local agencies some discounted billing rates in order to promote their internship program. And they are one of the firms that's on our short list. So they're going to come out with Tony and do a site inspection of the lift station really within the next couple weeks. And then do a preliminary analysis of what are options for working on that lift station, because we want to be able to move forward with that. Obviously, not just because of the sea level rise, but with respect to that particular issue, one of the options that we want to look at is the overflow tank. So, you know, prior to, you know, back in 1964 or wherever, it was just the sewer drained into the sump pump, and then you have pumps that push it out as fast as possible. So those pumps are operating too much, creates a reliability issue. But But in the event that you have a problem, the only place that that can overflow right now is into the streets. And so, you know, we have to run and hire FRM to pump and bring it to the sanitation district. So part of that design is to look at overflow tanks as well. And do we have room for overflow? I don't know that that's specifically sea level rise or climate change either, but it's a measure to help reduce the likelihood of sewer system overflows into water bodies.
Thank you. And Tony forgot to mention that he gave me a tour of the lift station, so I climbed down in the dry well last week.
Yes, I heard that you had quite the extensive tour. And
anybody else have any? I guess the lighting, there's never, I don't know why I'm drawing a blank, but it's always in the red because we don't have a revenue for lighting. It's one of, where does...
Yeah, that's right. So lighting doesn't have a specific... and so it's paid for by property taxes.
Okay.
There are some areas that have lighting charges. Usually those are associated with new subdivisions where there's a homeowners association, and then the homeowners association is responsible for lighting and the local governmental agency is not. We've had a couple of requests or a little bit of inquiries, nothing that's been significant about new street lights. And, you know, given the overall general fund status right now, property owners do have the ability also to have street lights put in and pay the bills directly to PG&E. So those are other options.
But it's not our responsibility because we have people asked about street lights.
Right.
So...
You don't have an obligation to add new street lights. If you got into really bad budget situations, you could turn off street lights. We don't have, you know, it's a community amenity, mm-hmm. nice community amenity, but you don't have a, you know, statutory obligation to keep them on.
And the county isn't responsible either?
Well, both county and Caltrans will have street lights as well. Right. And their situation is a little bit different because they have certain responsibilities for the safety of the motoring and pedestrian public. But I can't really speak to, I'm not knowledgeable about, you know, where they face significant risks of litigation in unsafe situations. But I just know that because they're responsible for streets, highways, they do have some responsibilities for the safety of motoring and pedestrians.
Like I know in new developments, the developer usually has to put in the street, be part of their development.
Yes.
With the county, but
and then typically also has to develop
for all
a
the older subdivisions. There's no, the owner just does it themselves, or
yeah, or they, you know, if funding is available, then convince the local agency to take it on.
Okay, thanks.
I did have one more question. I understand it's been about 10 years since we sent cameras into the sewer lines to check for breaks.
Yeah.
How often ought that to be done, and do we need to be budgeting for that?
So we still have those videos, and the need to go in and do new videos probably isn't real significant because based on that prior knowledge, we've identified where the problem areas are. Now, there can be a new problem area that pops up, but part of it is, you know, Tony and I think it's Casey's in charge of the sewer system management plan. So we have mapped out all of our, what we call the hot spots, the areas that we have bellies, the areas where we have, sometimes it's just called a slip or a vertical differential where a pipe will kind of break a little bit and it still flows, but it's not ideal. So we have a pretty good understanding of where those issues are, and that will end up driving our capital improvement program. Again, other things can pop up from time to time, but it was really that prior analysis and Tony and Casey and everybody's knowledge of the wastewater pipelines that give us a good understanding of where our problems are.
So what's the time frame for trying to fix some of that stuff?
I'm already late in trying to get the RFP to get the engineer on board. So it's definitely one of the priority items, and we're going to try to do that. Let's see, in terms of my overall priorities right now, it's getting North Swing and Pershing out to bid, and then turning around and start working on the proposals for wastewater. And that's, you know, I got a little bit of a start on it last week with the lift station.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else have any questions? Is there any public comment after all that? Does anyone have anything to add? Okay, this is a...
And again, that recommendation number two for setting the public hearing for June 26th to consider the adoption of the fiscal year 2019-20 preliminary budget is the one action item that we would be looking for.
I make a motion that we set, as I get my glasses out. I don't have the piece of paper. Anyway,
June 26th
for budget approval and public hearing.
Okay. Can we have a motion? Is there a second on?
Second.
Okay, Aline, Director B has seconded the motion. Can we have a roll call, please?
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Apolda?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay. Hearing items. Anything? Written communications, late written communications? Anything, Paula?
No.
Future agendas, see the board meeting timeline.
I have something I'd like to add to the future agenda. I'd like to have the board revisit our stipends for board meetings and committee meetings, have a general review, and maybe lower or eliminate some of the stipends.
Do we have a consensus with that?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
No.
So, do we want to vote then?
Motion. You want to vote and add that on future agenda items?
Yeah, I think it would
okay,
be appropriate.
Okay, then Shirley, would you want to make the motion, Shirley?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that discussion of stipends for board meetings and committee meetings put on a future agenda.
Second.
Okay, we'll do a vote.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Apolda?
No.
President Austin?
Yes.
So I can, you know, really do that. I'm not anticipating a staff report, though, since it's led by board discussion. We can put it on the next agenda and see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Then anything else?
Yes, I'd like to add a future agenda item to talk about painting the old firehouse. It's looking pretty ratty right now, and the folks at the place have visiting artists who would be happy to do some painting there, as well as the Oceana Beach Community Association excuse me, recently got a county grant to do some murals around town with artists, real artists, so... there's definitely opportunities to help beautify our community. I'd like to discuss that.
I think that President Austin and I have already brought that to a meeting, and for it was going to be on a future agenda already.
Is it already?
Yeah, I don't know that we have it listed. Well, there it says Firehouse Art as a future agenda item. I think firehouse painting / art. I mean, I definitely like the idea. I was also contacted by an individual who works with a local artist to do murals as well. So we might have multiple parties who are interested in providing something. And I think that
So I guess whenever you can fit it in.
We had a specific idea on types of murals that we wanted to bring forward.
Yeah.
Well, and to start with, to, you know, refurbish the outside and paint it, and, you know, the whole thing, and then to use a lot of vegetable or fruit box label art and kind of relate that to the depot and still the vegetable growers. And that relates to Oceano being the center of commerce.
I don't think we want to get into the discussion of how we might go into doing so. But
that was something that I brought forward earlier.
Yes, and so my sense is that there's the general consensus on the board to definitely look at it, and it sounds like there's might be a couple of good options as well.
Okay. All right. Make a motion to adjourn. Anybody want to adjourn?
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
And we need to sign the checks.